This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Our show today was recorded, so we won't be able to take your calls this afternoon. Coming up later, we'll hear about the struggle to create the Federal Reserve and how many of the early issues surrounding the nation's central bank are still in play today. But first, our nation's 16th president is often viewed as a man who is above politics. But in the first book of his multi-volume biography of Abraham Lincoln, Sidney Blumenthal says Lincoln was intensely ambitious, a political genius who held aspirations from his earliest years. Blumenthal is the former assistant and senior advisor to President Bill Clinton and senior advisor to Hillary Clinton. He's been a writer for several national publications, as well as the author of several books on modern-day politics, including The Permanent Campaign. Sidney Blumenthal joins us this afternoon to talk about his latest book, A Self-Made Man, The Political Life of Abraham Lincoln, 1809 through 1849. Sidney, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
You've written several books about modern-day politics, and there are lots of other historic presidents you could have written a book about. So why did you decide to do this biography of Abraham Lincoln?
I grew up in Chicago, and as a boy, I was taken to Springfield and saw the historic sites where Lincoln lived, and was really inspired in my interest in American history and politics by seeing them. It occurred at about the same time as John F. Kennedy's presidential campaign, so it was very vivid for me, and Lincoln has never seemed distant. So when I got the time and space to be able to explore Lincoln's life, I used my experience having served in the White House with President Clinton and worked closely with the president and as a journalist in Washington to understand our greatest president.
So is that what makes your particular biography on Lincoln unique? Because there have been quite a few other biographies about Lincoln. The fact that you have this journalistic and political perspective you're applying to his story?
Well, I think I'm able uniquely to see the political motivations and the connections on the basis of my own experience. I look at Lincoln, the poor boy, who grows into a man, basically transforming himself by his own means, then becomes a skilled politician and uses those skills to become the great emancipator. It's an incredible story, and I think along the way I have many original interpretations of how he develops, the people he meets along the way, and the world that he sees and interacts with, and how he makes himself into somebody who eventually saves the country and ends slavery.
How did you do the research for the book?
The research that I did on this book is connected to the development of the Internet. I think that if I were working in a previous era, it would have taken decades to do this kind of intensive research. I really drilled down. I have read everything I can. I go into the footnotes. I read through the footnotes, and I read those footnotes. I've been in the National Archives, the Library of Congress. I'm lucky to live in Washington, so I can visit them often. I've been in other archives as well, obscure ones, and I keep following connections. If Google had not copied entire university libraries, it'd be difficult to gather the kind of books that are necessary to do the research. But in virtually the entire 19th century and early 20th century is online now in terms of literature, because the copyrights lapsed, and you can really research this. So I've been able to find all kinds of incredible things. I have been able to go through Lincoln's speeches and see obscure references that he makes without citations. And by means of this kind of research, technologically and digitally, I'm able to discover their sources. And I've been able to, you know, go through all the original literature of people who lived at the time and knew Lincoln, including his law partner's incredible oral history, the first oral history of a president, of everybody who knew Lincoln, who was still living in the immediate aftermath of his assassination, and go through their recollections and then compare them. It's It's a lot of work. I've spent nearly a decade doing it, and I think I've drawn a unique Lincoln portrait.
Well, what surprised you most, Sidney, as you were doing your research about Lincoln?
I knew that Lincoln was certainly a politician, and what surprised me were several things about Lincoln. One, that he was a master he became a master politician to the marrow of his bones. He ran for office from the age of 23 on, from when he first landed in this tiny town of New Salem, Illinois, and worked as an assistant in a post office, which was a political job, by the way, and he began shortly afterwards running for the state legislature, and never ceased to be centrally involved in the politics of his time and place. And he was constantly working on himself. He was self-educated. He only spent a few weeks in a formal school. It was called a blab school, where they memorized things. I was surprised to discover his terrible relationship with his father, which was central to Lincoln's own identity. Lincoln said, "I used to be a slave." He thought of himself as a slave to his father, who took his wages and hired him out as an indentured servant before Lincoln turned 21. And Lincoln, partly as a result of that, had an unusual empathy from the point of view of the slave himself. It was very unusual in his rhetoric to see the world from that point of view. Lincoln was anti-slavery. He said naturally anti-slavery, but he was not a radical abolitionist, and I've been able to see those tensions as well between the radical movement and the professional politician who was trying to reach the goal but understands that he's limited by circumstance in trying to push the envelope. And I was also surprised at learning about his marriage to Mary Todd, who's been excoriated as somebody who harassed him and was a kind of mad woman who Lincoln just had to put up with. In fact, he was deeply in love with her. He was smitten with her. He married upward. He was socially mobile. It's a funny story of how they got married, in which he breaks up with her. He has a nervous breakdown, in fact. And then they get together through writing anonymous newspaper articles against one of Lincoln's enemies in Springfield. She married him as a rebellion against her family, which was the upper-class family of Springfield and of Lexington, Kentucky. He was a nobody. And Lincoln always was amazed, as he said to one friend, that Mary Todd still paid attention to a, quote, poor nobody like me. So the revelations are constant about Lincoln.
You were talking earlier about how Lincoln was a professional politician, and there's a view of Lincoln that he's someone who transcended politics, that it was something that was beneath him. So you're saying he was a professional politician. Was that a role that he embraced, Sidney? Did he enjoy it?
He embraced traditional politics enthusiastically. He did not see himself as apart from it. And there are some historians, particularly in the mid-20th century, who saw Lincoln as such a figure above politics because of the magnitude of what he succeeded in doing, that they couldn't imagine that he was involved in the nitty-gritty of politics. But in fact, he was not able to accomplish what he did apart from it. And it was only because he learned how to master it and was a political genius that he achieved the emancipation of the slaves and saw as president the country through its worst crisis, the Civil War, to its successful ending. Lincoln began his career in a new political party called the Whig Party. He was a very avid partisan politician and was even, as a young man, known as a slasher, because of his attacking mode in debates against his opponents. He wrote anonymous newspaper articles in partisan newspapers against those on the other side. He became the floor leader of the Whig Party in his 20s in Illinois, in the state legislature. He was constantly engaged in political combat with his chief rival through his whole life from the 1830s on, not just in his famous Senate campaign, with Stephen A. Douglas, another self-made man in Illinois, who he eventually ran against for president in 1860. So Lincoln also sees the collapse of his own party under the stresses of the issue of slavery. The Whig Party collapses, divides into Northern and Southern Whigs, and it also divides over the question of immigration. There is a huge wave of Irish and German of the country after 1848, and there's a big wave of nativism, and they form a new party called the Know-Nothings, or the American Party. Lincoln is anti-nativist, regards it as a form of oppressing, as he puts it, white people, is similar to slavery. And he gets drawn up into a new political party, which he helps create. He is the founder of the Illinois Republican Party. It took amazing political skill for him to bind together the coalition to create that state party. And the Republican Party was created state by state. And that became the vehicle that carried him to the presidency. Seeing Lincoln apart from politics is not seeing Lincoln properly. Lincoln, the great politician, and Lincoln the great emancipator are one and the same man.
I'm talking with Sidney Blumenthal. His book is A Self-Made Man, The Political Life of Abraham Lincoln, 1809 through 1849. Sidney, let's talk some more about his chief rival, Stephen Douglas. How did that rivalry start and how intense did it get?
Stephen A. Douglas was Lincoln's chief rival. The two of them were paired in the frontier state of Illinois from the very beginning, and they go all the way through the 1860 election in which Lincoln becomes president. Douglas is, strangely enough, to us who think of Lincoln as a monumental figure, Douglas was the greater figure in Illinois than Lincoln for most of Lincoln's life. He and Lincoln debated on stages from the 1830s on. Douglas was the leader of the Democratic Party, Lincoln the leader in Illinois of the Whig Party. They had very different views on the social programs, on economic programs, and eventually on slavery. So Douglas really blazed a path forward eventually for Lincoln by his Kansas-Nebraska Act when he was a senator. He was a very powerful senator. Lincoln was then had served one term in the Congress and went back to his obscurity of his two-man law office in Springfield, Illinois. Douglas proposes a bill, the Kansas-Nebraska Act, to open the Western territories to a question of whether or not the settlers would decide whether it would be free or slave. And that opens the whole question of tilting the balance of political and economic power in the country and threatening even the free states about whether they would be open to the expansion of slavery. And that vaults Lincoln forward into his role as the great anti-slavery champion and the creator of the Republican Party. So Douglas is indispensable to him, but interestingly, Lincoln's envious of him his whole life. He sees Douglas above him, and he follows him. And this rivalry is one of the aspects that really defines the political life of Abraham Lincoln.
So Lincoln was always in pursuit of Douglas, from what you're saying.
He was. He was always trailing after him, and finally gets to run against him for the Senate in 1858. They stage their famous debates, and then Douglas runs for president in 1860. He's been running continually for president since 1852, and the Democratic Party splits over Douglas's nomination, and the southern wing of the party breaks off because Douglas is not pro-slavery enough for them. And that opens the path for Lincoln's election. Lincoln's election itself is the trigger for the secession of the southern states and the formation of the Confederacy. And then Douglas, in a patriotic act near the end of his life, really abandons his presidential campaign and goes south and urges them to stay in the Union, and then stands by Lincoln after his election. He dies shortly thereafter and is not alive for the Civil War. So Lincoln then conducts a Civil War with his chief rival for most of his life gone.
What was Henry Clay's role in helping to shape Lincoln?
There are several figures who are key to Lincoln's development. Henry Clay is one of them. Henry Clay is one of the great American figures of the 19th century. He really defined the power of the House of Representatives. He was Speaker of the House. He was a senator. He was from Kentucky. He was for gradual emancipation of the slaves, a kind of incremental approach. He was called the Great Compromiser. He achieved compromises between the North and the South in 1820 and 1850 that preserved the Union. And Lincoln thought of him as his beau ideal. Clay also defined himself as a self-made man. He was a poor boy who made good. And Lincoln saw him as his model. What's interesting also is that Mary Todd, Lincoln's wife, was the daughter of Henry Clay's business partner and political ally, Robert Todd. And Lincoln eventually meets Henry Clay, his idol, and is somewhat disillusioned because the great man is a little cold and condescending toward this obscure politician. Lincoln then sort of realizes he has to make it on his own as well as he heads towards the Congress for his one term. There are other figures, including Cincinnati's Salmon P. Chase, who was one of the leading anti-slavery men of the time. He plays a key role in Lincoln's life. He's the one who turns abolitionism into a political movement. He helps create the Liberty Party, the Free Soil Party. Salmon Chase is a lawyer in Cincinnati. He's known as the Attorney General for Fugitive Slaves. And he defines the whole constitutional question that the Constitution is not a pro-slavery document, that freedom is national, as Salmon Chase puts it, and slavery is local and that it must be restricted and can't expand. Lincoln takes up all the definitions as provided by Salmon Chase. Eventually, he makes Salmon Chase his Secretary of the Treasury, plays a key role in his administration in the Civil War, and Chase himself is a political rival of Lincoln and wants to replace him as president. So there's a very important and heavy role here of a leading figure of the day from Cincinnati.
Sidney, how do you think Lincoln would fare in today's political environment and 24/7 media coverage?
Well, I think several things would happen to Abraham Lincoln. First of all, his personal life would be exposed, and he would have to answer for his early nervous breakdowns as a young man. He was near suicidal at one point because he couldn't cope with he was a man really without a family. He had awkward and difficult relations with members of the opposite sex until he married Mary Todd. And he would have been subjected to tabloid coverage. But Lincoln himself was very media savvy in his day. Newspapers had become the new thing. He was really a secret co-editor of the Sangamo Journal and wrote anonymous editorials. He was a secret owner of a German language newspaper that promoted him. And he had an extensive relationship with the journalists of the day. He even wrote some of their articles under their bylines. He was constantly talking to them. We think of Lincoln as this distant figure, but he was deeply involved in the media of the time, and he would have adapted, but he would have had to deal with the attacks on his character.
The religious beliefs of candidates has become a big part of campaigns today. What role did religion play in Lincoln's career?
Religion is central to understanding Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln was raised on the frontier, first in Kentucky, then in Indiana, and his parents, who were illiterate dirt farmers, belonged to very tiny, unusual, primitive Baptist emancipationist churches. They were evangelical, but anti-slavery. That was unusual in Kentucky, especially. So Lincoln, as he said, was naturally anti-slavery. It came from his family. His family fled Kentucky to get away from slavery, really. His father had to compete for wages against slaves in Kentucky, so he went across the Ohio River to Indiana, to a free state. Lincoln, however, rebelled against the overbearing Calvinism of the religion that he saw, that cast peoples as sinful. He didn't like the way that people were being punished for their personal failings or foibles. And he, through his own reading, became a free thinker. He read Thomas Paine's Age of Reason and other works. He had the Bible almost in his DNA at the same time. At one point early in his political career, he wrote a tract denying the divinity of Jesus, and one of his friends grabbed it from him, put it in the stove, and burned it because he wanted to preserve his political viability. In Lincoln's first congressional campaign, when he runs for the Congress, his opponent is a man named Peter Cartwright, who is a hellfire preacher. And the campaign against Lincoln is that he's an infidel. It's his reputation as a free thinker is that he doesn't believe in religion. And Lincoln has to issue a statement saying that it's a very carefully crafted and clever statement saying, I wouldn't support anybody who didn't respect religion. And Lincoln gets elected. Lincoln's religion is always mysterious. He reads theology. He remains a free thinker at the same time. He never joined formally a church. His wife was a churchgoer. She was Presbyterian. He went with her occasionally. He had many conversations with churchmen, clergy, theologians, and he understood the language of Scripture. At the same time, he was always a skeptic and always reserved for himself what he truly believed. He was a deeply private man. And I should add, he profoundly hated the theology that developed in the South that used the Bible to justify slavery. And his culmination of his hatred of that twisting of Christianity is expressed in his second inaugural, when he talks about not knowing God's purposes, but that if there is a just God, that God has seen the end of slavery. So religion is one of the most important aspects of Lincoln's education, his thinking, and even his politics.
So, Sidney, the first volume in your Lincoln biography takes us through 1849. You're coming out with Volume 2 next year. Can you give us a preview of what's going to be in Volume 2?
Yes. Volume 1 ends. Lincoln has, in 1849, Abraham Lincoln has transformed himself from a poor boy into the man who will be the recognizable Lincoln. He's ended his only term in the Congress. He's dealt with the issues arising from the Mexican War, of the expansion of slavery in the West. He proposes a bill in the Congress. He wants to propose a bill for the gradual emancipation in the District of Columbia, never gets to even propose it. It's his first, as it were, emancipation proclamation. He returns to Springfield. He's obscure. He's in the political wilderness. The next book sees Lincoln in the political wilderness, the crack-up of his Whig Party, the way in which Stephen A. Douglas opens the path for Lincoln by opening the question of slavery in the Western Territories, and the rise of Abraham Lincoln as we know him today, and his founding of the Illinois Republican Party. That is Volume 2. I have written 4 volumes. It carries Lincoln all the way to the end, and even through, the books go even through Reconstruction, dealing with his legacy. And so I'm very eager to tell this story.
Sidney, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That was Sidney Blumenthal talking about his new book, A Self-Made Man, The Political Life of Abraham Lincoln, 1809 through 1849. Coming up, we'll hear about the creation and history of the Federal Reserve, and later in Focus on Technology, making driverless cars safe. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.